Selling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's time for Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee!
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut-up term.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Here we go. That's right. You are now talking with TD. I am your host, Teron Davenport. We have Elijah Campbell hitting the switches. Awesome show for you ladies and gentlemen this week. We got Chris Sanders coming in, of course, the weekly Run TMC segment. I think it might be time to go back to Sanders and Salty. We'll see what happens there, how the convo goes. We got Michael DeRocco, Jacksonville Jaguars, ESPN, NFL Nation Jaguars reporter. Let's put it that way. Going to go over the draft and some of the stuff he saw down there in our rookie minicamp. We got Redell Anthony talking a little shop. He actually is a former NFL receiver for the Buccaneers. He, as a matter of fact, Elijah, Redell Anthony is my favorite. You asked me who my favorite college football player ever is. I will say Redell Anthony. Really? So I'm looking forward to this. I actually have gotten really cool with him. So we'll have him on. He trained Dez Fitzpatrick down there with Yo Murphy, which is where Logan Ryan and Adoree Jackson are working. So we'll get into that as well. And then we'll wrap it up with a little bit of Diana Russini, right? My ESPN teammate, NFL national reporter. So we have a lot, but I think let's start off. There's only one way to start this show, man. Let me get the music. Oh, yeah. You know. What are we? There it is. You hear the music. So you know, once you hear that music, the next voice that you will be blessed with is that of Tyrone Hill. Man. I mean Chris Sanders.
Hey, okay, first of all, we're going to start the show off really good. First of all, I thought I was your favorite player, man. You was telling me, man, Chris, I love what you did in the NFL. I love all the things you did. I even love your Instagram. Now you're going to flip script and say, that other dude, your number one player, man, I'm about to hang up.
I said college football. He is my favorite college football player of all time. But you know what? There wasn't a number 15 on my wall like there was a number 81. So, you know, there were 81 was up there along with 89, and there were a bunch of numbers up there. I had my whole wall wide receivers. So, and you were one of them.
And you know I'm kind of salty, man, and we'll get into that later, but somebody took my jersey number. You know I'm salty about that. I saw that on some of the videos. Somebody took my 81 jersey, so I'm kind of salty about that.
I'm mad. Well, hey, now that you said it, rookie minicamp, obviously that's something that we need to discuss. We had your stories, your personal ones last week. Mm-hmm. This week we'll go over some of the things that you saw. I mean, this is kind of becoming a wide receiver-centric show. But, hey, it is what it is. We're going to go to our specialty. Tell me about Fitzpatrick and Racy McMath.
You know, just looking at, Dez, you know, I mean, he's got good size. He's got good hands. And I just think the thing that he needs to really work on is just the burst at the top of the route. And when I say burst at the top of the route, it's that extra gear that you can get in and out to make the defensive back think that you're going on the nine route. Because, you know, anybody can do the four-corner drills. Anybody can do the ladder drills. But I want to see the explosiveness. I want to see, pop, get out of there. When somebody runs around, you'd be like, woo, that's what I want to see. Because when you get into the league, everybody can catch the ball. Everybody can do the four-corner drills. Everybody can do the ladder drills. I want him to take his game to the next level and really perfect that at the top of his route, because other than that, he did pretty good. And then, you know, I watched Mick's math. First of all, I'm mad because he got my jersey number because of that. That's number one. But, no say here or there. But, you know, this guy, he's built stocky. I mean, he's a stocky little guy. Look big, look like he can bench press like 475 pounds. But you can tell that he's raw. I mean, he's raw, but he's got good speed. He's got some good talent. But I think if he can just understand the wide receiver position, I think Rob Moore is one of the best coaches in the NFL that's going to teach these guys that it's not just about speed and it's not just about running a nine route. It's about having a game plan at the line of scrimmage and catching the ball through traffic and doing the drills and making it transform into your play. That's what I want to see with these guys.
And that's the key thing. And it's something that I see this Titans coaching staff just across the board with their drills, and I've said it to them multiple times because I love it. You know, I love seeing what they do in a game, in practice, transfer to the game. And
yeah.
A quick example, you know, you look at Jeffrey Simmons, right? The guy was out there blocking passes at the line of scrimmage like Shaquille O'Neal, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And the reason was because Coach Terrell Williams would have the kickball, and he had the guys individually go out there, and he was teaching them to match hands. He raises the hand with the kickball, they raise their hand. And then he throws it, and they knock it down, and it just teaches you timing. And like I said, matching hands. That's an example. We'll get into another one a little bit later because I know we want to talk about Rashad Weaver. But you're 100% right. You know, these drills definitely transfer, and that's a key thing. I just for you, because I know you've worked with a lot of receivers, and especially at
–
and the thing that's really good, like on your part, is you're getting them – you know, you're working with them in high school. So when really everything is starting to – that foundation is being formed.
Yeah, it's kind of like you ever watch the movie Ghost?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not gonna do that, but they're like molding that that clay into a pottery pot.
Somebody called the cops.
Exactly. I'm not gonna stand behind them, but I'm just got the bad illustration. Just help me on this. Just work with me. But you're molding these kids into a great wide receiver. I mean, and I love specializing in technique, because the reason why I love specializing in technique is because we focus so much on he's fast, he runs a 4.3, but he doesn't know how to get off the line of scrimmage. He doesn't know how to burst off the cut. He doesn't know how to do stems. He doesn't know how to do these things, so he's raw. And what helped me get better and elevate my game was Les Steckel. Les Steckel came in and he said, Chris, I know you're fast. I know you can run a 4.2. I know you can jump, but I'm going to teach you how to run routes. I'm going to teach you how to burst off the cut. I'm going to teach you how to wind run a vanilla route. When I say a vanilla route, that's like a straight stem. And then I'm going to teach you different stems. I'm going to teach you how to get in and out of your cut. I'm going to teach you how to use your eyes. I'm going to teach you how to have head fakes at the top of the route to take your game to a whole different level. And that's what I want to see with these receivers of the Tennessee Titans. And I know Rob Moore is going to do that. Rob Moore's played in the league for a long time, and he's teaching these guys, and he's putting these guys in position to actually have a game plan in playing wide receiver.
You mentioned Les Steckel. Well, his son Luke is the tight ends coach.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
How about it?
That's awesome, man. And you know what? It's funny. I say this. I'm a better wide receiver than I am now than when I played the game, because I understand. I understand what's actually going on. And there's three phases to being a wide receiver. I don't even know where I'm going here, but I think people need to understand. There's the number one phase is the thing you do at the line of scrimmage.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you got to have a game plan at the line of scrimmage. And then the second phase is their acceleration. Okay, you're accelerating to make you think that you're going deep on a nine route and showing these guys that, okay, I may not be going deep, but every route is based off the nine route. And number three is what you do at the top of the route. Head face at the top of the route. Eyes, using all those things to become that elite wide receiver.
And that's really what it boils down to.
Woo.
And having been there and done that, because I think that's important too, and it kind of leads me to what I wanted to ask you about as far as Mike Vrabel is concerned. But first, let me just focus on yourself. You're in a situation where you're coaching a position that you played at a very high level.
Mm-hmm.
How much does that help you be able to get the message across and just really understand, hey, I get it. You know, there are times where the guy's going to be here, you got to do this, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, I do. It's like this. If I want to be a great wide receiver, I'm not going to go to Wayne Gretzky because he's never played a position. And that's the same thing with me coaching. I played the position, and I've done some great things, and I understand coverage, I understand these things. But to be a great coach, you have to be a great teacher. And the only way I can teach is because I've been in that position. I got press coverage. I saw cover two. I saw cover three. I saw Robert. I saw a one high. I saw all these coverages, so I know how to attack them. So now with the kids that I'm teaching at Montgomery Bell Academy, I'm just showing them the same picture that I saw.
Yep.
That's the key. I saw this picture. So let me take this picture out of my mind and put that picture in your mind so now you can get the same results that I got.
What's the greatest teacher experience? And that's what you're imparting to those guys. And that's what Mike Vrabel was imparting to Rashad Weaver. And I don't know if you saw my post on IG, but I went back and I watched it over and over and over again. And I just loved the technical part of it that Coach Vrabel got into, as far as how you have to have your toes pointed and how you have to drive and do some of the things that are necessary when setting that edge.
Yeah.
And what are your thoughts on that? Did you see the video?
Yeah, I did. But see, the reason Mike Vrabel can tell you the different techniques is because he had to.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't the fastest.
Mm-hmm.
He's a big dude, but he wasn't the biggest. He wasn't the most explosive. So in his mind, it's like, okay, I get the advantage by having the proper technique. And I'm going to switch gears for a second, but it's the same principle. I'm going to talk about Bruce Matthews. Bruce Matthews is probably the most unathletic guy I've ever seen. He's kind of strong, but his technique is flawless. When I say flawless, it is flawless. He knows that, okay, if this guy's coming here, I'm already in position to hit you in the mouth. Now, if you try to give me a good push and you try to attack me, my hands are ready to absorb the impact and counteract everything that you do. And that's the same thing with Mike Vrabel. Mike Vrabel didn't have the top-end speed. He didn't have those things. But what he mastered and what made him so special is he paid attention to details and he mastered the technique to make him a Super Bowl champion.
And that's why I personally think a lot of times you have these guys that are just gifted. They're just blessed,
right,
with ability. And there's just stuff that they could do that just no one else is going to be able to do. But then you have a guy, case in point, like Mike Vrabel, who is basically like ordinary when it comes to comparing to other NFL athletes.
Right.
You have to be able to find that edge. And I think that's why those guys make really good coaches. And I firmly believe that, man. And just go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, no, I was going to go right to Weaver and just what stood out to you, because I know, like, for me, seeing Rashad Weaver just not in pads and just, you know, and I saw him in person at the Senior Bowl, and he didn't come off the same way as he did when I saw him on Saturday. I mean, he looked a lot leaner. He looked longer. I was really surprised with just his physical appearance.
But his hands were so doggone heavy.
Yeah.
I was watching the drill, and Mike Vrabel was discussing it, and that other coach that was taking the punishment that was getting
Coach Crow, Ryan Crow.
He was getting blasted. I mean, he was hitting him in his chest. He was almost taking about 4 or 5 steps back.
Yeah.
And we always talk about how heavy Weaver's hands are. He's like throwing them down.
Yeah. Yo, it was like one of those cartoons, right, where, you know, they start playing that music and the soul just elevates out of the body. It was the soul with the chest pad just elevating out of Coach Crow's body, man. Coach Crow is actually a pretty well-built dude, man, so it's funny that happened. But, yeah, you're right, though. I think it was really interesting seeing that. And then I will say this just before we get up out of here. I was impressed with Shane Bowen as well because – Here's the deal, and this is why I asked Coach Vrabel about it afterwards. He didn't give really a detailed answer, but it's something I'm going to continue to monitor, and it's this. Shane Bowen, last year when he was the default coordinator, worked solely with the outside linebackers. This year, at least, well, rookie minicamp, I saw him with the outside backers. I saw him with the D-line. No, I didn't see him with the D-line. They already had 3 coaches on one, poor Naquan Jones. But I saw him with the DBs and with the linebackers as well. So you're seeing him just kind of rotate, and I think that's going to help just kind of get his, whatever that sauce may be, on the whole defense. And I think that's something that we need to take note of.
Yeah, and then the thing about it is, you're, as a defensive coordinator, you need to have a relationship with all your players because they got to be able to trust you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if they trust him, and then he's out there, and he's talking to everybody, and he's explaining everything, and they hear his voice, then now they're going to hear his voice on Sunday.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's the key thing is hearing the voice and understanding exactly where it's coming from and just the mindset, the mentality, the approach that you want. So that's awesome insight right there. I will say this also, just in parting, it's always fun watching Coach Terrell Williams. And the D-line coach.
Oh, he's got energy.
Yo, he has energy, and he will. Yo, if you're soft, you better not be on the D-line, because he's gonna send you back to the building and just really doubting life, man. Because I've heard just, you know, the way he approaches, and I think D-line, like, you gotta be like that, man, because that's a no holds barred position. Like, you're in the trenches, man. It's me and you, you know what I mean? And you ain't going to get me, I'm going to get you.
Yeah, and it's the attitude, because on the defense, you're on attack, man. If you're not going to be out there attacking, then you're going to be sitting on the sidelines, you know, watching somebody else attack.
Yeah, exactly. And Coach Kenyche Udeze, He was a former, yeah, took a lot of practice, man.
Whoa, that was pretty good.
You could just call him Coach KU.
Yeah, KU.
That's what I was like, Coach KU? And he was like, yeah. So he's another one that's going to help on that D-line. I'm really looking forward to just this coaching staff as a whole working with these guys. And I always love when there are former players who are coaches. And that's why I wanted to get your insight, your input from that perspective.
Appreciate you, man. You my guy, big dog.
Yes, sir. And, you know, we were going to get a little Sanders and Saudi.
We'll save it for next week.
We'll save it for next week. But I get it, man. Ernest Givens, Chris Sanders, Jonnu Smith, Racy McMath.
McMath.
We'll see what happens.
Appreciate you, Doc. Man, great talking to you, man.
For sure.
Peace out. This is Caleb Farley. I'm talking with TD.
All right, back from the break, talking with TD. The tour continues. We're going to work our way through the AFC South. You obviously get all you need from a Titans perspective here, but this week it's time to go to the Jacksonville Jaguars, the team that had the number one pick, the team that signed Tim Tebow, the team that made Travis Etienne line up as a wide receiver. There's a lot to talk about, so no better person to do that than my ESPN NFL Nation teammate, Michael DeRocco, who covers the Jaguars. Mike, what's going on, man?
Not much, TD. How are you?
Hey, I am awesome. It's a beautiful time of the year, I say that. And this is when the weather is kind of like what you have all the time down there in Jacksonville. So I get a little piece of your sunshine, and I appreciate that.
That's good. Well, you know, I try and send it up there as much as I can. Love Nashville.
No doubt about it. And you get to make an annual trip here, obviously. But speaking of sunshine, you got the team you cover got a new quarterback, huh? Trevor Lawrence, a.k.a. Sunshine. What was the energy like with him finally being in the building? Because this is something that franchise has obviously waited for a long time.
Yeah, it's a little bit like, you know, a kid on Christmas morning, you know, but like, you know, you're getting some really good gifts, but you can't wait to get them. And then when you get them, you can't really wait to play with them. I mean, that's kind of what it's been like. And not only inside the building, but in the city too. I mean, everybody's just been, you know, excited if they were going to draft Trevor, then they draft him. And, you know, last Saturday was the first time that the media's had a chance to see him anyway. And, you know, he looks the part, and we've all seen it. I mean, he was limited in the number of throws that he could make, and they didn't have him handing off, and they didn't want him taking snaps under center to kind of protect that shoulder. But, I mean, he ran around, he threw it. We've had some interesting quarterback play down here, to say the least, and we've had to watch some of that stuff in practice. And this looks a little different. I'm eager to see when he's fully cleared in training camp and him cutting it loose and everything be good, but you know, it was just nice to see him out there because it's the sign that, you know, ball's on the way.
How was he as far as when he was – well, let me ask you this first because I know we didn't get to see much of it. Did you get to see them kind of going in and out of the huddle and those kind of things?
Yes, we did.
Okay, so how was he as far as being able to get that play call from Urban Meyer and go to the huddle and regurgitate it?
Well, I think – you know, the regurgitation part wasn't the issue, but, you know, Urban actually, you know, made a point to say, you know, these quarterbacks are playing the spread and it's all signaled in. Mm-hmm. It's a big adjustment for them getting it in their head, you know, in their headset and then having to call it and then get it out and get everybody lined up. So they had some trouble with the mechanics of all of it. They had to break huddle and, you know, line up for some plays. And then there were several times guys were in the wrong spot, so he's kind of moving guys around. So they had to come back three or four times. So they were having a little bit of trouble there. And Trevor admitted, hey, look, it's an adjustment, you know, because normally you just look to the sideline. But now you got to hear it and then get it out to the rest of the guys. So it's going to be something that, you know, he's going to have to get used to. But obviously he's got all of OTAs and training camp to get it. To get it down.
Yeah, it's so much different. You know, you got a lot of these quarterbacks that come on. This is why I felt Trey Lance had an advantage because he actually worked through an NFL offense at North Dakota State. But you have these guys, you know, they look to the sideline and it's a picture of an ice cream cone and the Incredible Hulk, and that's how they know what play to call. So it is a lot different. I'm glad you mentioned that. Moving on to another position, the other first-round pick, number 25 overall, Travis Etienne. He wasn't really in the backfield much. What's going on there? I mean, is that something – I guess they're looking for their next Urban Meyer wants that Percy Harvin type, huh?
Right, exactly. That's what it is. And, you know, Trevor was the only quarterback in minicamp. They only had 18 guys. And, he, like I said before, he wasn't allowed to hand the ball off. He wasn't allowed to take snaps under center. It was, you know, what's Etienne supposed to do? I mean, he can't do anything in the running back. There were two offensive linemen there. So it's not like they could really run a lot of running plays. So they want to use him like Urban used Percy way back in the day at Florida. And, you know, he already knows what's going on at running back. So get him out there, get him in the slot, get him out wide, let him run some routes, let him see what it's like and, you know, run a route and adjust to what a DB is doing and all that kind of stuff that he's going to have to learn anyway. So, you know, look, when they hit OTAs next week, I mean, he won't be just strictly lining up a receiver. He'll be in the backfield as well with the rest of those guys. So it was just for the first 3 days of minicamp to kind of get him acclimated to it.
So it was almost much ado about nothing, right? It's one absolutely. Of those situations where you have to have context.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think part of it stems back to the night that they drafted him, Urban said third down back. And then he went back and clarified, you know, the next time we got him at the end of the night that, yeah, you know, it's a Percy Harvin role. It's everywhere role. So I think people hear third down back and that got stuck in their head. And then they see him lining up at receiver and they're like, what are you doing? So it really was a little bit of it kind of blew up and it really shouldn't have.
There you go. Okay, that's good insight on that one. And we're talking to ESPN NFL Nation Jaguars reporter Michael DiRocco, my teammate, my AFC South reporter teammate. Yes, sir. Let's look at defense. And one of the guys, and it's funny, he went 33. I had a first-round grade on him. I thought he would be a guy that could go late first round. And that's Tyson Campbell. Did you get to see him line up? And if so, like, how was he moving? What was that like?
Well, he worked off to the side on that Saturday because he had a slight hamstring strain that he suffered on Friday. So he really wasn't doing a whole heck of a lot. But, I mean, you see him, and he's a big corner. And yeah. Urban wants big corners. I mean, you can kind of see C.J. Henderson is 6 foot. You know, Shaquille Griffin is 6 foot, I think maybe 6'1". You know, and Campbell's a big kid too. So they really want these big physical corners, and he fits that for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's something. And then I would imagine Andre Sisco. I mean, that's great value. 65 overall, getting that guy, the safety out of Syracuse. I mean, you're talking about a rangy ball hawk. I would imagine he wasn't out there, though.
No, he was doing a little bit of stuff off to the side, too, just because, you know, he's coming off that ACL. But the expectation for him is to be ready by camp. That's what everybody's been told, and that's what he's been told, to be ready to go by camp. So that's a good sign. And look, it's funny because they could have, if you include the nickel, they could have five new starters back there. You know, Sisco, it's free safety, Rayshon Jenkins, Tyson Campbell, whether that's at nickel or the outside. I would assume it's at the nickel job because they signed Shaquille Griffin in free agency and gave him big money. So there could be five brand new starters in that secondary in 2021.
Wow, that's communication. They're going to have to get that going because that in the secondary is huge. So it's always something that a new group of guys have to work on. I want to wrap up the draft part of this with Jordan Smith. And man, oh man, the thing that comes to mind with when I think of him is length. So you got to see him in person. What was that like?
Yeah, he's kind of all arms and legs at this point. you know, I mean, he's running around. I mean, he's an impressive-looking kid. He's, you know, a ridiculous athlete, but he's raw. And that's, you know, it's going to take a year or two before maybe they can really feel like he can be, you know, start reaching his potential on defense or at least start being a guy they can count on defense. I see a lot of special teams for him this year, but they've got to work with him a little bit. But here's the thing, though. That, you know, they've got Kalyvon Chaisson and Josh Allen as their outside linebackers in this branded 3-4, and they don't have anybody else other than those guys, really. And Chaisson only had one sack last year. So the only proven pass rusher is Josh Allen. So it wouldn't surprise me if this kid, you know, gets some reps early in the season. Let's just see what he can do kind of thing, you know, as long as he's holding his own. But he's got to get bigger, and they really want to kind of ease him along if they can.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. Flipping to just the team overall, I got to ask you, man, what do you make of this Tebow situation?
How much time do we have? Like, here's the thing. I mean, you know, full disclosure, I covered Tebow. I was working for the Florida Times Union newspaper here in Jacksonville. I was a UF beat writer when Tebow was there, and I covered him and Urban Meyer. I did UF for 13 years, so I've covered all of Tebow in college. Those guys are tight. He and Urban are really, really tight. Mm-hmm. And this is the only place where he could get this opportunity. I mean, he wasn't going to be able to call up Bill Belichick and Belichick be like, yeah, come on up. We'll work you out. See what the heck is going on. You know, this is it because of Urb. And, you know, Urban is doing his buddy a solid. And, you know, I think if they bring him in and they say, okay, you're a tight end, and we want you to basically transition into a full tight end the way Logan Thomas did, then that's not going to work, because that's not like a one training camp deal. That's a 2 or 3 year deal. But if they're going to bring him in and say, listen, we're going to put you at H-back. We'll put you at tight end every once in a while. We'll throw you in a wildcat. We'll put you in the backfield at the same time as Trevor and scare the hell out of the defense. You know, maybe you're a short yardage guy for us, 5-6 snaps a game. Then I think he's got a chance to make the roster. But the bottom line is, though, 90 guys, he's clearly 89 or 90 at this point, and he's got a lot of work to do. So it wouldn't surprise me if he doesn't make this roster. But, I mean, he's a guy that's going to work hard. He's going to do the extra stuff before and after practice. So he'll give it, you know, 1,000%, you know, in this transition to tight end. But I just don't know how much of an impact he's really going to be able to make on this team. And it's tough, man, to transition positions at any age. But at 33 years old, man, that's going to be tough.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens. I mean, you always wish the best for everyone. So I think that's going to be obviously a situation to monitor, because Tim Tebow is a lightning rod. He's a guy. He's the definition of polarizing. So I'm sure you'll have a lot to write about as he continues to put that jersey on, you know what I'm saying? But, yeah, Mike, I really appreciate you, man. It's always great getting the opportunity to talk some shot with you, man. We'll see what happens this season. Hopefully you'll be able to come up here. I could take you for some barbecue.
I am looking forward to it, absolutely.
Yes, sir. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Michael DeRocco, ESPN, NFL Nation, Jacksonville Jaguars reporter.
This is AJ Brown, and you're talking with TD.
All right, here we go. Back from the break. It's always a pleasure, man, to do the phone a friend thing, man. And it's rare where you could go into your phone and you could pull out your favorite college football player ever and get him on your show. But hey, I'm blessed to be able to do that. So we're gonna bring in my guy, man, University of Florida legend, Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Washington Redskins, then Redskins receiver Redale Anthony Reed. What's going on, man?
Nah.
Funny, I know you probably laughed when I said my favorite football player ever, man. It seems like you get a kick out of that.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, somebody, you know, near your age and someone's doing something real good for the world, to the world, in the world, and they tell you are their favorite, you know, college player. You know, I thought that type of stuff almost normally are left of people who are deceased. But now, you know, I'm still here.
Yeah, no doubt, man. It's the go-go gadget arms, man. I don't think there was a deep ball you couldn't get to.
Oh, yeah. And that was definitely one of the things, you know, I made sure when I got to college that I kept doing since I was a kid, and that's catching that deep ball. That's all I did when I was younger, because I was always too small, too skinny, but I was faster than everybody. So every play, I just ran deep. So, you know, I got a lot of practice. I didn't get a lot of balls thrown my way, but I got in great shape.
There you go. So now you're doing training, and obviously wanted to get you on because we talked last year. You know, you had trained Henry Ruggs the third. This year, you know, you worked with Des Fitzpatrick among some other receivers. Who all was down there in that group that you had?
Besides Des, we had Devontae Smith. D. Estridge. Anthony Swart. Marcus Felton.
Okay.
Went to the Browns. I know I always mess his name up. That's why I always just had Ben Eskew. Yes, the receiver who ended up signed with the Rams.
Okay, so you had a pretty solid group of receivers there. How was Dez from a competitive standpoint? What was he like as far as day in and day out measuring up to, you know, some of these other top prospects you had?
Dez, you can tell Dez had been coached and taught a lot of things on how he carry himself, how he pick up on things. And, you know, you said at one time he pretty much could get, 5 weeks of teaching him to drag his feet on his 40 start. That's tough for ever. But, yeah, anything else, you know, he picked up rather quickly. And then I found out that his coach at Louisville that really recruited him was Lamar Tomlin. So and that's one of my good friends. So I phoned him up and even got more information on him. So, you know, Dez knows how to handle himself on and off the field. You know, he seems to have a good head on his shoulders and know how to leave work at work and home at home.
That's good. You have to be able to separate the two. Just from a technique standpoint, I know you guys, you know, you and Yo Murphy, you guys get deep, man. You make sure that these guys really understand how to play the position because both of you guys have been there and done that yourselves. So what were some of the things that impressed you just off the bat seeing? Because you mentioned that you could tell he had been coached before.
Yeah. One thing right off the bat with this, just how naturally he caught the ball. Throwing a high ball, he forms a diamond and catches, thumbs together. But if you throw him a low ball while he's standing there, he will flip his hands over and catch his pinkies together. So, that just shows a guy with great ball skills that's been taught how to catch the ball when it's thrown to different areas of your body and just make it look natural. Because, most guys try to bend over and catch it with their thumbs almost on the ground or whatever, mm-hmm. like they're catchers. Instead of a shortstop. Him just doing that right there as a receiver, you can tell that, he's a natural catcher of the ball.
That's exactly what I was going to say. So it seems like he naturally catches the football. As far as footwork and just like let's talk releases because that's something that it seemed like he had that down pat down there at the Senior Bowl. So what was that like? Was that something that you had to work with him to improve upon? Was that something he came there just looking sharp with?
He came there with that. As I said, he's been trying to perfect this position for a number of years, and I can tell they focused on it a lot. But what he does a great job release. How he has an understanding on his responsibilities as a receiver, and that's knowing where you are in the read, so that'll tell you how much time you have to win at the line or win down the field or, in between. So, there's on the set if you got a go route call instead of just taking off running and trying to make the quarterback throw it 65 yards on the outside shoulder, you can work somebody and the ball gets thrown on the 45 yards, but you have more separation. And I think they say stat-wise, if you throw a shorter pass, your percentages goes up. you know, just by understanding that's some second level stuff, because everybody want to go deep. But going deep, I mean, I thought 65 going deep is catching it at 25 and scoring the last, you know, 65 yards or so.
Yeah, so, no, that's a good point.
He has patience and all that stuff.
Okay. And then when we're talking to Rito Anthony, former NFL receiver and actually trainer of NFL receivers now, he actually worked with Dez Fitzpatrick in the pre-combine, so to speak, training. Riddell, what were some things you wanted to just kind of areas for improvement that you saw that you guys worked on?
Really, I'm thinking with Dez, he's a long strider. And he tends to do that the entire time he runs. So he, you know, would never really maximize his speed. So my thing with him was just get him to just shorten his stride just shortly, just so he could get more burst and get to his top end on faster. Because he's so long stride, it's his feet in there too long. So, and by doing that, it'll just help him at the top of his route, too. Because now it won't chop as much because he's not reaching. He's getting there, then stopping.
Now, when the Titans picked him, you know, you sent me a text and you said that he was a good player and you said that he's going to fit in nicely with the Titans. What was it that made you feel that way, you know, so strongly about his fit?
Because he's a young man that don't pick up the playbook.
Okay.
And he's going to know what everybody does. And by him, you know, doing that part, that just speeds up his progression. And now he just got to get comfortable getting out there where they will want to use him at and get used to catching the ball, getting open, you know, on an NFL practice. You know, NFL preseason, then so on. And once he does that, you know, with the tight ends and the receivers, you know, the Titans have, you know, he could play all three positions because he would know what everybody does.
And that's one of the other things I wanted to ask you just as far as where you project him. So I know we talked a little bit about him being an outside guy. Where do you think his impact is going to come for the most part initially?
I think they're going to probably put him outside. That's what they probably start off with. And he could handle that. Because seeing like with offense being ran up there, some lighter side adjustments, so you have to be on your P's and Q's every third down.
Yeah.
So if you hot or not. So you need to find that smart, but, you know, to recognize fast enough and still get open. And that goes along with him being great at releases. He has patience, not to rush his route, just let it go, get to his breaking point and get in out of his break. So, you know, that'll help him a lot inside also.
Now, did you get to – because obviously you're training him, but were you questioned by any teams? And you don't have to say what teams if you were, but did teams come to you or to Yo to just get some information on Dez?
I know already, you know, like three – for NFL coaches. So I talk to them every year.
Okay.
Yeah.
In general, let's say Coach X, hey, Ree, man, we're looking at Dez. What do you think of him? What's your reply? How do you reply to that type of intro, so to speak?
Oh, same like I told you. You can tell he's a coach's son, well coached, understands the game, smart, don't know how to do it. You know, from day one, he's going to compete. You know, he may smile a lot and act goofy, but he will compete. And definitely, if you need him on special teams, he's going to get out there and do that because he just loves the game. So,
and what,
he'll be a great pickup to anybody.
And lastly, what about blocking? Because you told me, like, hey, he's that's a part of his game, too.
Yeah, that's part. That comes with that he competes. He's a competitor. Because one thing about blocking is effort and if you want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody say they want to block this and that, but you really got to want to go in there and block and tussle with somebody. And he has that type of mentality. He want to get in there and see how he measures up to somebody. So, you know, they're going to get in that block. He's going to do all the small things. And those are the things that really get overlooked a lot in the NFL and football in general. Just small things. Everybody looking at the ball, but they ain't looking at how the ball getting down the field by creation of big holes and all that good stuff.
Gotcha. Well, in closing, the big three, you, Ike Hilliard, Quez Green, you guys are all doing great things. You know, Ike Hilliard is coaching the receivers at Pittsburgh. Quez just got the head coaching job at Manatee High School, and I know you're down there training, so I want to give you an opportunity just to shout out, you know, what you're doing and make sure that the listeners know what's going on with you.
Well, I'm down here in Tampa, Florida, and I'm starting to get my Why Not Me Academy going, and it's going to be group golf sessions. Receivers, try to get them all at the same skill level. They'll be coming this summer. You can DM me on Instagram, RedellAnthony15, and the same on Twitter, I guess, something like that.
RedellAnthony15.
Yep, that's how you spell it. So get more information. DM me at that IG or Twitter, and I'll be having information coming out within the next 2 weeks on dates and times.
There you go. So if you're in the Florida area, the Tampa area, this is the place to go. My man Ree has trained multiple NFL receivers. He has some young pups coming in. Tell me a little bit about that, too. So he has a lot going on. Ree, I appreciate you coming on, man. It's always a pleasure.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
For sure.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
Say, let that play a little bit. Yeah. Back from the break, talking with TD. It's my pleasure to bring in my ESPN teammate, Diana Russini. I wanted to get some little get hype music because I know she gets on the mic and gets excited herself. So without further ado, Diana, what's going on?
Hi. I used to play that song in my high school parking lot in my 1984 red Nissan Maxima with tinted windows. And I used to think I was cool. And you know what? I think I was a lot cooler back then. So it's good to hear that song. Bring back good memories.
Yeah, that song was my jam, man. I always loved that song. The upbeat, you know, Q-Tip. But yeah, I appreciate you coming on. I want to just talk a little bit about the Titans, obviously, and we'll get into some things. So just let's start off with the free agency itself, right, and what the Titans did. And I want to kind of get your take on the Bud Dupree acquisition. What do you feel about that? Do you think it will help that pass rush? You know they were in trouble last year.
Yeah, I remember when I initially caught wind that he was on their radar, I wasn't thrilled about it, knowing that Bud was coming off an injury. I get to cover the Steelers a lot. And actually, I get to chat with Bud a lot, too, and he's a great guy, and you're going to learn that real quick, and that locker room is going to learn. So I had concern just from that injury perspective, and maybe that's a little PTSD from Jadeveon Clowney and just feeling like, oh, man, like there's got to be another worry here. Mm-hmm. But as it started to come together, and I started to talk to more people, and I even spoke to someone in Pittsburgh about it, I don't think the injury is that big of a deal. It's not as significant. It's not going to be something that I think is going to be a problem where he's not practicing, you know, full during the week. I mean, maybe they take it easy in some cases just for load management reasons. But as it came together and the more I'm looking at the roster with him included, and as I look around the league too with the other free agent pass rushers, I think the Titans did it. I think they scored here. I think this is a significant addition to their team that is going to help take this defense at least to the next step, knowing that there has to be improvement here after what we saw last year.
Absolutely. And you mentioned the part about him in the locker room and the guys in there recognizing him being such a good dude. I talked to him a little bit about just the pass rushing culture and how he could help develop that, because it's not something that they have. How do you think that locker room, you know, having seen him in Pittsburgh and how he was able to really, I don't want to say infiltrate, but just like be a big part of that locker room. How do you think he will be able to do that here? What are some of the really good qualities that he brings to the table?
So something I always observed about the Titans was, and it's interesting because it's a good thing and a bad thing at once. I always felt that the leader of the team was their head coach, which isn't common around the league. The coach has influence, but you didn't really feel like the coach was the glue, at least with other teams I cover. Mike Tomlin's actually the closest to the way that runs, where Mike really has a lot of influence on his locker room. But they got guys in Pittsburgh. They hold each other accountable. There isn't fear of speaking up and kind of getting into it when guys aren't doing stuff. And it doesn't get out in the media. Some of this is just from observing it myself in the locker room, but also just talking to guys and recognizing the type of relationships that they have in there. That always stood out to me about the Steelers. And it's almost lacking a bit in the Titans, because I just think they are continuing to find themselves as a team and find, I think their identity and the culture is set. I just think this could be a great opportunity for Bud Dupree to sort of show through example how that works. And sometimes it takes winning, right? Sometimes it takes, which the Titans are in a space where they should feel like those leaders in there, the guys that want to talk up and want to make a difference and be those type of dudes in the locker room who can get the most out of their teammates. They're starting to get to a point where that's what they can do. They're getting that reputation as winners. But Bud Dupree is coming from an organization with a Mike Tomlin being their head coach, and obviously we know all those players on the Steelers defense that have influenced him as well, I'm sure. A very specific set culture in Pittsburgh that matches really well in Nashville, and I think it's going to just do nothing but continually grow that unit as a whole. As I think he, you know, we, I don't want to make predictions on leaders, but I bet you when we're talking in October, we're going to see Bud Dupree's one of the main guys on this Titans team that is running it.
There you have it. We needed that, Elijah, because you know there's people on bridges out here ready to jump. You know it. And Diana just talked them off, so you're a lifesaver from that from that perspective. I'm moving on to offense, right? And it's I always love when you do your shots in your house, because I see that one picture, right? And Derrick Henry, he's made it to your Wall of Fame. What is it about Henry that you like so much, and you know enough to put him on that picture on your wall?
I'm so glad you appreciate that, and I think Derrick does too, because I've got a lot of pictures. I've been fortunate in my career. I've talked to a lot of guys on the field, so I had to be particular who I wanted up there behind me, and Derrick made the wall.
Yep.
And he noticed. He noticed, by the way. The first day I had it up, he saw it. He texted me, like, made the wall. So I've always liked Derrick's growth more than, the finished product to me is what it is. I just like the journey he's been on. I like the person he's become. He's not the loudest. He's not the in-your-face. He's not the vocal guy. He's the lead by example, even though he wears ridiculous clothes all the time to practice and has his own style. I like the way he carries himself. I like the way he does his business. And And obviously in handling with the media, he never wants the attention. He never makes it about him. And when I've interviewed him, you know, it is really funny when the camera's rolling, the Derek I get compared to when the camera's off.
Yes.
Yes. he's a really kind, thoughtful person. And I appreciate that when the camera comes on, all the words he uses are about team and team only. And it's smart because when you're a player of that caliber, everyone's looking to you, and it may not be innate for him to be the type of loud mouth type guy like a Taylor Lewan, but he's still a leader by default because he's so incredible. So I think the fact that he does that, knowing everyone's watching and he could make it about him and he doesn't, I've always really admired that. And I've actually even learned from him just in terms of being professional in certain situations, scenarios. He's been asked some tough questions in the past, and he just handles himself well. And I think he represents exactly what that organization wants the Tennessee Titans to be.
That's awesome. We're talking to Diana Russini, ESPN national NFL reporter. I want to get into, because you're plugged in, I want to get into the June 1st, right? That post-June 1st free agency period that people are predicting.
Yeah.
Do you see that as something where a lot of free agents will be available, like veterans and good veterans?
Yeah, I don't, actually. Huh. With the exception of Aaron Rodgers and Deshaun Watson, they're obviously not free agents. I just mean in terms of if they're going to get moved.
Right, right.
It's going to be after that June 1 date because of salary cap repercussions. But, no, I actually don't. I think we already looked at the free agent market this past spring as being a little hollow, and that's not just coming from talking to our analysts. That's just even calling around the league of what they thought of this free agency market. You know, from a TV perspective, it felt like it had a lot of layers and depth and exciting players, but when you started to really break it down, there weren't really a lot of high caliber, great players on the street, with the exception of, you know, Trent Williams was probably the biggest name, without a doubt, the biggest free agent. Mm-hmm. And everyone kind of knew what he was doing. We all knew he wanted to stay in San Fran. He loves it there.
Right.
But either way, so, you know, I already think there's not a lot there. The solid players are signed up. I just don't think that we're going to see a big flush of players available. And I don't see the Titans making any big moves or trades. I know everyone wants Julio Jones to wind up
That's
there. I've been hearing
going.
That lately. it's like the second a really good player is available, immediately my tweets, I'm like, Titans, Titans, Titans.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my gosh. Like, no, 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 no. I get it. And Julio, you know, let's transition to Julio now. You know, the fact that the Falcons are dealing him, you know, we could probably talk for a while here about if it's a good move or not, but I get it from a personnel standpoint, his age, the weapons they have already, durability last season wasn't great. He's played in 82% of his games before last season. Last season was his worst year in terms of getting out on the field. But for him to, the reason why I don't think he fits in Nashville with this Titans team, because I think what they're doing on offense and what they have, it's been growing, and the personalities they have there are growing themselves, and they're gaining confidence that way. That I think adding a player like a Julio, it may mess up what they have going. Hmm. And yeah, you don't want to deny a great player like that, but AJ has turned into he's always been fantastic, but
that's that dude.
The guy.
Yeah.
He's the dude. You know, and this Josh Reynolds pickup, I thought, I kind of came out of nowhere, and I wasn't really paying attention to Josh Reynolds, to be honest with you. but then when I started to do some work and talking to him and talking to people in L.A. Where he played previously, I was like, oh, okay, this guy can play.
Yeah.
So I think this is going to be a sneaky good pickup for them.
Yeah, and you mentioned Josh Reynolds. I like that pickup. I actually was pretty big on him coming out of A&M and just a little frustrated watching him over the last few years just because of everything that has happened. But One of the other moves that they made was Jackrabbit Jenkins, and you're pretty well tied in with the Saints. Did you have experiences with Jenkins? And if so, what comes to mind when you mentioned Jackrabbit?
Yeah, I was with him in New York too.
Oh, okay.
I was just like a local reporter, so I've known him forever. He's great. He is raw. I think he's a little different than the guys in that locker room, but they're going to love him and he's going to fit right in. And he is a hard worker, and you're never going to see lack of effort from this player. That is something that I remember with ease, and even in New Orleans, especially. And they wanted to keep him. I remember there were some things going on with New Orleans, and I don't remember the specifics, but they were trying to keep him on the roster. They liked him. I remember when they even signed him, or when they brought him to New Orleans, and they were doing their homework on him. They thought he was a gigantic addition to their defense, and he was productive. He did a good job, but
yep.
I think for looking at who the Titans lost, and him coming in, I think this is why I have confidence. Some people think I'm nuts that I've been saying that I think the Titans are actually going to be good again, because no one's saying that, Teron. I don't know if you watched our shows.
Yeah,
NFL Live, get up. Nobody thinks that the Titans are going to be ballers this year. They think it's almost like everyone just thinks they got a little lucky. You know,
mm-hmm.
They don't really they don't pay attention enough, in my opinion, to actually what's been built and what's being built. Yeah, they had their weaknesses, but this team is constructed on offense, especially to make a run in December and January. It is built that way,
yep.
Which is why I'll never count them out.
Exactly. You're right. The only person I recall, you know, on some of those panels is Teddy Bruschi. He's the only one who is, will talk up the Titans other than yourself. So Titans fans, they definitely appreciate that, and that's why you're loved here in Nashville, that's for sure. So before we get you out of here, just you look at the draft, right? Caleb Farley, what were you able to gather just as far as his situation and how ready he may be to play?
Yeah, I've already been hearing good things about him, which is awesome. That's the one thing I think you understand is very well. No one in the Titans organization talks up anybody.
Yeah.
Which I love. I love that formula, right? Because there's no expectations. It's smart. And it matches with what they're building and what they're about, right? Which is team, not individuals. Nor do they put their players in positions to have to live up to something.
Mm-hmm.
Which I see around the league all the time, and I roll my eyes. I'm like, why would you ever say some player is going to be a future Hall of Famer? Why would you ever do that, right? It doesn't make sense. Let the work show. The talk is cheap. But that being said, you know, just trying to check in, see what's going on, and talking to some people there, some assistants, you know, it sounds like the rookies all together are a little behind fundamentally from a technique standpoint, because a lot of them missed a lot of time because of COVID and they didn't have a regular year. And that's just not with the Titans, by the way. This is like almost every team I've talked to. They're a little annoyed with maybe annoyed is the wrong word, but they're a little surprised that the rookies are a little behind from just like technique and basic things that they're, you know, I talked to one coach in the NFC East on the defensive side of the ball. And he's like, I was literally teaching stuff that I used to teach when I was a college coach, of like real basic things that draft picks that went high are they're not smooth. It's not fluid yet. So I know the Titans are dealing with that too. So, but otherwise the overall vibe there is that he's going to be a guy and he's going to make them better pretty quickly.
Yeah, without a doubt. And you're spot on with the whole overall, frustration with the rookies. And that's why Mike Vrabel actually mentioned that he's going to bring them back and he wants to have them a bit separate from the veterans, because the things that they have to focus on with the rookies is going to interfere with the learning, not the learning, but just the process for the veterans. So that's a great point. You definitely were on point with that one.
Yeah, and it's everywhere. It's going to be something where if you're a Titans fan listening to this going, what the heck do we draft? Like, well, a bunch of guys that don't know what they're doing. That's not it. It's really a very common storyline that I heard all weekend when I was checking with teams. I was actually really just calling to check in on, like, the top five picks, and it just turned into everyone complaining about the same thing of, like, yeah, these guys are all a little behind. So the one thing I think Titans fans should be excited about, if there's one coaching staff I think that can coach them up and get them ready, it's these guys because they're teachers more than coaches. I consider them that more than any other staff in the country because just the way they carry themselves and just from talking to players and just how they learn when you play for the Titans, you know. So I think this is the perfect recipe for success here.
There you have it. That is your invitation to get off of the bridge, ladies and gentlemen. Diana, I appreciate you coming on. It's always a pleasure, and I can't wait to catch up with you at some point when the season rolls around. So definitely take care, and once again, thank you so much.
Thank you. I can't wait to be back in Nashville. Hopefully a nice winning season this year once again.